It is Thursday, June 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the United States faces a cool reception at the upcoming G7 summit. The United Nations says human rights should be on the agenda at next week's summit between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, and electronic dance music continues to shoot up the charts. It's all ahead. The heads of state of the Group of Seven industrial powers meet in an annual summit Friday and Saturday. The German Chancellor Angela Merkel predicted would be contentious. The ending of exemptions from U.S. tariffs on aluminum and steel imports last week angered America's traditional allies, Europe, Japan, Canada, and Mexico, who have vowed retaliation. The G7 meeting offers the other six a first opportunity to discuss the matter with President Donald Trump. Host Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said he expected to have frank and sometimes difficult conversations with the president during the meetings in Charlevoix, Quebec. But Trump economic adviser Larry Kudlow said the president will not back off his America First strategy.
We're talking everything through. There may be disagreements. I regard this as much like a family quarrel. I'm always the optimist. I believe it can be worked out. But, you know, and I'm always hopeful on that point. This is a G7 meeting, and the presidents and heads of state will get together. Let me add one thought to that, though. President Trump is very clear with respect to his trade reform efforts that we will do what is necessary to protect the United States, its businesses, and its workforce, so that we may have disagreements, we may have tactical disagreements, but he has always said tariffs are a tool in that effort, and people should recognize how serious he is in that respect.
Kudlow said it is a good thing the other G7 members are meeting with the president. In the case of Canada, he said the two nations will overcome their differences and remain firm friends and allies. University of Denver International Affairs professor Jonathan Adelman tells International Edition's Victor Beatty Europe and Canada should take note. China, no ally of the U.S., is offering to reduce its trade surplus by buying $70 billion more in American exports.
And that doesn't seem to be terribly beyond the capabilities of the European countries. Because you can ask another question in return. Who's providing the security for Europe these days? If you look at the three biggest countries, England, France, and Germany, they spend 1.5% to way less than 2% of their money on security. So the United States does provide things for them in return. It's just not written down. So I'm sorry that we're getting into this and didn't want to, and I really think a fight among friends is a little silly, but I think there should be some rational discussion of why the United States wants to have a discussion about this.
Is President Trump's America First policy alienating U.S. allies?
I don't think it's alienating U.S. allies. I think they're concerned that we will reduce the trade surplus that they all have. But nobody, not even Angela Merkel, wants to talk about this. Let's put it this way. The European countries have nowhere else to go. Who else is going to protect them against the Russians and possibly in 25 years, the Chinese? We spend $700 billion this year on defense. These countries are spending vastly less.
Before leaving for Canada, German Chancellor Merkel previewed the dynamics of the G7 summit Wednesday, telling the German parliament, "It's apparent that we have a serious problem with multilateral agreements here. Is multilateralism over?"
No, I don't think so. I think at the end of the day, this will work out just like it's working out with the Chinese, who are not our friends. And we're agreeing on a 20% reduction in the gap between our imports and their exports.
It seems that the two issues that will dominate this meeting in Canada will be trade and the Iran nuclear agreement. Can those differences on those issues be bridged?
I don't think so. And I will tell you why. Because major American companies already are going with the sanctions. And in France, Peugeot, which is a major auto dealer, already said, we're not going through this. We're just going to give the Americans what they want. We are not going to deal with Iran. What's ironic is that we're having a better time dealing with China, which is not a good friend of the United States, than we are with some of our most intimate friends that we also helped liberate in both world wars.
Will anything be accomplished at this G7 meeting, and is it still relevant?
It is relevant, and I think that one possibility is that when the doors are closed, that the media isn't there anymore, that there will be some effort to negotiate something that is rational and reasonable.
Jonathan Edelman of the University of Denver. Presidential adviser Kudlow said Trump believes the global trading system is broken, with many U.S. trading partners having higher tariffs. He said the president is seeking reciprocity or a level playing field, a fight he believes is good for America and ultimately for the rest of the world. Here are some of the top news stories trending. President Trump says it's ironic that the Russia probe continues as he heads to international summits. Well, ahead of the summit between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and President Trump, Japan's prime minister is making a visit to the White House. Afghan forces will temporarily halt offensive operations against the Taliban, and the United States is sending aid for volcano victims in Guatemala. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's Curiosity rover has been providing valuable new insights on Mars since its landing on August 5, 2012. Among the rover's functions is its ability to drill into Martian rock to gather samples for analysis by its onboard laboratory instruments. But mission officials at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory say Curiosity's drill feed mechanism stopped working reliably in December 2016. Since then, members of the Curiosity team have been working to get the drill operating again. NASA now reports it recently employed a new technique that allowed the roving Mars lab again to drill for rock samples, the first time it was able to do so since October 2016. NASA JPL says it's continuing to fine-tune the new drilling method as well as a new system to deliver samples to its onboard labs. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, First Lady Melania Trump appears before the media for the first time in nearly a month. We'll have a report. The UN Special Investigator on Human Rights in North Korea is calling for human rights issues to be included in next week's U.S.-North Korean summit in Singapore on the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN investigator Thomas Ohayo says he does not believe a discussion of the human rights situation in North Korea will undermine the summit. On the contrary, he says such a discussion would work in North Korea's favor because it would show its desire to become a normal state. He tells VOA the United States has taken a very strong stance regarding the human rights situation in North Korea, so he believes and hopes U.S. President Donald Trump will follow up on this during his discussions with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Otherwise, that will be a misstep, first in terms of the negotiations, because unless human rights is not addressed in the negotiation of the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, I think that will not allow for a sustainable agreement.
Ohayo says history shows that ignoring human rights works against everyone's interests. He notes human rights issues were put aside 25 years ago when a framework agreement was worked out to freeze North Korea's nuclear power plant. He says human rights were left out again during six-party talks not too long ago.
Those processes, although they were well-intentioned, were not successful. So for this new process to be successful, my humble opinion as a human rights reporter is that the human rights dialogue should be included because it is part of the discussion. Human rights and security and peace are interlinked, definitely. And this is the situation where we can prove that.
North Korea is considered to have one of the worst human rights records in the world. The United Nations accuses the government of widespread, gross violations of human rights, some amounting to crimes against humanity. They include violations of the right to food, forced labor, arbitrary detention, and torture. A report in 2014 finds between 80,000 and 120,000 people are detained in political prison camps. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
California voters went to the polls this week, and a candidate from each party emerged the leading contenders in the governor's race. California has a unique jungle primary election system in which the top two finishers, regardless of party, advance to runoffs 5 months from now. Republican businessman John Cox finished second in the 27-candidate field, but he starts as a heavy underdog in the race for governor against the front-runner in Tuesday's balloting, Democratic Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, a former mayor of San Francisco. John Pitney is professor of American politics at Claremont McKenna College and a longtime observer of California politics. I asked him whether Newsom and Cox were expected to lead the field.
Yes, the most recent polls indicated that Newsom and Cox would be the number one and number two candidates, respectively, and the outcome was pretty much in line with the polls, although Cox did a little better than the polls would have suggested.
Was President Trump's endorsement of Cox, was that perhaps a deciding factor?
Trump's endorsement of Cox helped consolidate Republican support behind him, perhaps not enough to get a majority, but enough to qualify for the top two. So it was definitely an asset.
Well, looking forward to the eventual election, I mean, California is very much a Democratic state. Newsom has been around politics in the state a long time. He was the mayor of San Francisco, and he's been lieutenant governor to Jerry Brown. Does it seem that it's very likely he will emerge as the victor?
Yes, it's very likely that he's going to win. California is a Democratic state, voted heavily for Hillary Clinton. So Trump's endorsement, while it might have helped Cox get into the top two, will be a distinct liability in the fall. Also, Newsom has very strong fundraising. Cox is wealthy, but not nearly wealthy enough to self-finance a general election race for governor of California. So Newsom has the electorate in his side. He also has the resources on his side. He's very likely going to win.
Well, in other races, Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein, she won in her race. She is 84 years old. Has her age been an issue in this contest so far?
Kevin DeLeon, her main rival, hasn't directly raised the issue of age, although he has tried to, wherever possible, showcase his own vitality. It really hasn't sunk into the voters. She is very, very active and isn't, to put it bluntly, not showing her age. And so the voters really haven't taken that into account very much.
And looking ahead to the congressional races, I know the Democrats are hoping to pick up some additional seats in California. Does that look likely?
Yes. We don't know how many additional seats the Democrats will pick up. They were worried that the top two primary might lead to several situations in which the top two candidates were Republicans. That apparently did not happen. Democrats have a shot at winning up to seven seats. They might not get all seven. These are seats that were held by Republicans, but the Hillary Clinton won. However, they're very likely to pick up several of these seats, if not all seven.
It's kind of interesting how California politics have sort of evolved over the last few decades, because it used to have some prominent Republicans. You know, think of Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan. There was always that Orange County was seen as very much a Republican area. And, you know, the state's changed quite a bit.
That's right. The state has changed in a couple of important ways. It's now a so-called majority-minority state. Non-Hispanic whites are less than 50% of the population. The electorate is still majority white, but even a lot of white voters are trending Democratic. The economy has changed. Used to be we had a very large defense sector that's smaller than it used to be. The service economy is greater, and workers in the service economy tend to vote Democratic.
John Pitney, professor of American politics at Claremont McKenna College. Making her first public appearance in nearly a month, First Lady Melania Trump attended a FEMA briefing alongside her husband in Washington on Wednesday. This comes after weeks of public speculation over the First Lady's whereabouts and extended absence following the First Lady's hospitalization for routine kidney surgery in May. VOA's Elizabeth Cherneff has more.
At a briefing with federal emergency workers, the president began with a shout-out to the First Lady.
Thank you, Melania. She's doing great. She went through a little rough patch, but she's doing great, and we're very proud of her. She's done a fantastic job as First Lady. The people love you. People of our country love you. So thank you, honey.
Mrs. Trump, who underwent kidney surgery in May and remained hospitalized for 5 days, has kept a low profile in the weeks since, causing wide speculation over her whereabouts. Earlier Wednesday, the president slammed recent media coverage of the First Lady, calling the rumors about her health, quote, unfair, vicious, and all fake, adding, she is doing really well. On Monday, video posted on Twitter showed Mrs. Trump in the East Room of the White House with the president, attending a private reception for military families. Mrs. Trump's public profile reflects the more guarded image she's cultivated since stepping into the role of First Lady, says Catherine Jellison, who chairs Ohio University's Department of History.
And the fact that she has maintained more of a lower profile has just made people all the more curious. So I think she's receiving the same amount of scrutiny. What's different is that she's not giving a lot of information back to the people who are doing the scrutinizing or asking the questions.
As the rest of her family headed to the Camp David presidential retreat over the weekend, Mrs. Trump was missing. Her absence, all the more noticeable as the First Lady just recently unveiled her official policy campaign focusing on well-being, social media, and opioid abuse.
Let us teach our children the difference between right and wrong, and encourage them to be best in their individual paths in life.
Some say the First Lady's visibility, while not a constitutional or legal matter, is more or less understood as a social and cultural expectation.
It is a criticism based on past precedent, because Americans have come to expect that First Ladies, regardless of personal circumstances, health problems, even family tragedies, still make public appearances.
And from the clothes she wears to the policies she champions, the modern media spotlight on Melania Trump isn't going away anytime soon. Elizabeth Cherneff, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is International Edition. Electronic dance music seems to be everywhere. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with a song that's rising on the music charts.
Today we are focusing on an electronic dance music producer, DJ, who goes by the alias Marshmello. And he's got a new song out off of a brand new album that's coming out this Friday, and it's called Joyride 2. And his name is Marshmello, but his real name is Chris Comstock, and he's also known as .com. And he's worked with a number of different artists. He's currently on the charts in the 11th position on the Billboard Hot 100 chart with a song we're going to listen to right now that features Anne Marie, and it's called Friends.
You say you love me, I say you crazy, we're nothing more than friends. You're not my lover, more like a brother. I know you since we were like 10. Yeah, don't mess it up, talking at ears. Only gonna push me away, that's it. When you say you love me, that made me crazy. Here we go again. Don't go look at me with that look in your eye. You really ain't going nowhere without a fight.
You keep hearing hearing a lot about this EDM and these DJs. And
yes. It's a recent phenomenon with folks like Calvin Harris and David Guetta and DJ Tiesto and Diplo and Skrillex, and the list goes on and on and on. All these guys are really making a big impact into music. It used to be a specialty kind of music, EDM, but now it's been mainstream. And what they are doing is teaming up with a pop singer, and then they create a song, and kind of the EDM DJ producer is enjoying the success of the song, largely because of some of the singers. Like, for example, Zedd and Maren Morris have a big hit that's in the top 10 called The Middle, and there's quite a few folks out there just like that with big hits right now. And Marshmello's new song comes off of a new album. We've waited a couple of years for the new album from him, Joytime 2, which goes on sale this Friday. The interesting thing about Marshmello is he wears a tin can, a garbage can, over his head. And it looks like a marshmallow. It's a white garbage can with eyeballs. It looks exactly like a marshmallow character. He doesn't want his face to be seen. So that's his whole bag, and that's why he goes by the name of Marshmello. He'll be performing coming up next week on the YouTube Live E3 Expo. E3 stands for Electronic Entertainment Expo. This is a huge event in Los Angeles starting on June 11th through the 14th at the Convention Center in L.A., where every gamer, all of the, you know, the PlayStations and Nintendos and everybody of the world will be gathering for this exposition. All the folks who are into the game world, video game world, will be there. And so Marshmello will be a part of this. He'll be live streaming on YouTube. He has over 2.4 billion hits on his videos on YouTube.
Wow.
And 10 million subscribers to his own YouTube channel. Now, Anne Marie, who he's performing the song with, friends, she has her own debut CD out now. It's called Speak Your Mind, and she's going out on tour for the album. She's been a part of several big hits recently, most notably the number one song, Rockabye, with Clean Bandit and Sean Paul. So Anne Marie is also making a name for herself. So you got two big new names in music, and we've got a winner on International Edition with Friends.
All right, they're joining forces there.
Yes, may the force be with you.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossing. And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On June 8th, much of the world observes United Nations World Oceans Day. The idea is to remind people how important the world's oceans are to all life on Earth, to celebrate their beauty, and to bring attention to the impact human activity has on the oceans. This year, the theme is preventing plastic pollution and encouraging solutions for a healthy ocean. The world's oceans cover nearly three-fourths of the Earth's surface and contain 97% of our planet's water. They produce over half of our oxygen, help regulate our climate, absorb carbon dioxide, and support the greatest abundance of life on our planet. Nearly half of all species on Earth depend on the oceans for survival, and for many of the rest, including for people, the oceans improve the quality of life. The oceans are also indispensable to the world's economy because they are key to transportation and recreation. And inasmuch as over 95% of the underwater realm remains unexplored, it is nearly a certainty that their depths may hold the cure to many a disease, the resolution to many a problem. And yet, as much as 40% of the world's oceans are heavily affected by human activities that result in pollution, overfishing, and loss of coastal habitats. Of particular concern is plastic debris. Some of it comes from ships that ply our rivers, lakes, and seas, and eventually makes its way into the ocean. But about 8 million metric tons of plastic waste washes off land into the ocean each year. Once there, it begins to break down until it turns into small fragments known as microplastics. Plastics are a serious threat because they degrade very slowly, entangle sea creatures, damage habitats like coral reefs, and are ingested by marine animals. Researchers have documented impacts of plastic on over 650 different marine species, including sea turtles, seals, whales, dolphins, porpoises, seabirds, and fish. On World Oceans Day, we must remember that the health and safety of our oceans is our collective responsibility, one that we cannot afford to neglect. Only through good stewardship can we safeguard the health of our oceans and ensure that the oceans continue to meet the needs of future generations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.